Hello, friends. This is Fred Dominguez. The Gospel of Mark appears second in the canon of our New Testaments. It is the shortest of the four Gospel accounts, containing only 16 chapters, as they are divided in our Bibles. The brevity of Mark's account has led some to believe that it may have been the first of the Gospels to be written. These commentators suggest that Matthew and Luke may have used Mark's account as the basis upon which they wrote their accounts. However, there is no credible evidence to suggest that any of the Gospel writers collaborated with each other. It is generally agreed that the writer of this particular Gospel was John Mark. His mother may have been an early disciple of Jesus, and it is possible that he was the young man who fled naked into the night when Jesus was arrested in the garden, Mark chapter 14, verses 51 and 52. John Mark was a cousin to Barnabas, which is the likely reason he was chosen to accompany Paul and Barnabas on the first missionary journey recorded in Acts chapter 13 and verse 5. He may have still been a very young man at this particular time because he left Paul and Barnabas at Perga, Acts 13 and verse 13, and did not complete this journey with them. It was many years before Paul reconciled with John Mark, but at the end of his life he asked Timothy to bring Mark to him, because he was useful to him for service, 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 11. Mark's gospel is characterized by the use of the word immediately, which appears some 47 times in the gospel. Mark's gospel was written to Romans and reflects their appreciation of a story told in simple and succinct language. This also explains Mark's explanations of Jewish customs and Aramaic words. Some commentators characterize Mark's gospel as a series of powerful snapshots of the Lord's ministry. Mark is one of the synoptic gospels, along with Matthew and Luke, and it tells the good news of Jesus in a similar manner to these other accounts. However, Mark and Luke are the only two gospel writers to mention the incident of the widow's gift. And for a few moments today, we will take a look at Mark's account of this event and draw some important lessons from it. The 12th chapter of Mark begins with the Lord's parable of the vine growers in verses 1 through 12. After this parable, the Pharisees and Herodians tried to trap the Lord with a question about paying taxes to the Romans. That's found in verses 13 through 17. When their attempt to trap the Lord failed, the Sadducees tried their hand at trapping the Lord by asking the outrageous question about seven brothers who were all married in succession to the same woman without leaving an heir. That's in verses 18 through 27. The Lord's answers to these challenges left his accusers virtually speechless and prompted an honest scribe to ask the Lord what the greatest commandment was. This man was different from the others, and the Lord's response to him showed that this was true. At the end of his conversation with this scribe, the Lord said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." That's in verse 34. At this point, the Lord turned to the crowds and warned them about the hypocrisy of the scribes. In verses 38 through 40, the Lord said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and like respectful greetings in the marketplace and chief seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets, who devour widows' houses and for appearance's sake offer long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation." This last statement is particularly poignant because Mark transitions from this statement directly to his account of the widow's gift in verses 41 through 44. Here's what Mark wrote for us. "And he," meaning Jesus, "sat down opposite the treasury and began observing how the people were putting money into the treasury. And many rich people were putting large sums in. But a poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which amount to a cent. Calling his disciples to him, he said to them, 'Truly I say to you, this poor widow put in more than all the contributors to the treasury, for they all put in out of their surplus. But she, out of her poverty, put in all she owned, all she had to live on.'" As we consider this brief incident, two aspects of Mark's account catch our attention. The first is that Jesus purposely sat down to watch the people as they made their gifts to the treasury of the temple. The repositories for these gifts were located in the court of women, so that both men and women could approach them to make their gifts. This was an open area in which many people would have come and gone on a typical day. As the Lord observed this activity, the Scripture notes that he saw many rich people giving large sums of money. We might wonder how the Lord knew what the people were giving. Certainly the open nature of the area would have made it easy to see the kind and number of coins that each person dropped into the treasury, and it appears that none of the people tried to conceal what they were giving. Nevertheless, it might have been a little unsettling if the people had known who was watching them as they made their gifts. The second and most important part of this account is the gift of the widow. Mark tells us that she put two small copper coins into the treasury. These were the smallest coins in circulation at that time, and the New American Standard Bible, from which we're reading today, says that their value was a cent. Taken together, the two coins equaled about 1/64th of a denarius, which was the day's wage for a laborer. We do not have a modern equivalent to the denarius, but if we estimated a day's pay at $100, the widow's gift would have amounted to about $1.56. Now, the widow's gift was small in comparison to the large amounts that the rich had given, and it was also small in its own right. This fact makes it all the more interesting that the Lord took note of it in such a positive way. In fact, the Lord was lavish in his praise for it. Notice again in verse 43 that the Lord said that she had given more than all the contributors. Now, obviously, he was not commenting on the monetary value of her gift, but on something more valuable. So what was it that made her gift so superior to all the others? The answer to this question is what I like to call the widow's mite, spelled M-I-G-H-T. In human terms, her gift was insignificant, but the greatness of her gift is in comparison to how the rich gave their gifts. You see, the Lord said that they gave out of their surplus, the leftovers, as it were, of their wealth. In other words, their gifts were superficial, not sacrificial. On the other hand, the widow's gift was superior because it was all that she had. She left the temple grounds with absolutely nothing to live on. Now consider for a moment what this means. When the widow left the treasury, she had no money to buy food or clothing or anything else that she might need. It is fair to say that very few of us have ever been in such a situation. And until we have been, we cannot fully appreciate what this widow did on that occasion. Secondly, the widow's gift was superior because it was born of a faith in God so great that she faced the uncertainty of life unafraid. This widow obviously had very little wealth, but her God required a gift. Her faith and trust in God empowered her to give all that she had in full confidence that the Lord would provide for her. Perhaps she had heard the Lord's teaching in the Sermon on the Mount when he said to seek first God and his kingdom, and all the necessities of life would be added to them, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33. Perhaps she didn't even know who Jesus was, but instead just simply trusted God so much that it didn't concern her to give all she had as a gift to him. Whatever her motivation may have been, she was spiritually head and shoulders above all the others who gave on that day. And the Lord commended her for it. When we consider this incident from Mark's Gospel, we learn two important lessons that are timeless. First, we learn that God can accept and use even the smallest of gifts when they are given in accordance with his will. The widow's mite reminds us that God has often taken the small and insignificant and done great things with it. The account of Gideon, who delivered Israel from the Midianites with only 300 men, testifies to this truth. It doesn't take a large gift to accomplish much in God's kingdom if we trust in him. What the widow put into the treasury was insignificant in monetary terms, but it was a greater gift than all the others given that day combined. A second lesson that we learn from the widow's mite is the power of faith and obedience. In our time, the widow might have been excused if she had withheld her gift from God. After all, society today believes that the rich should bear the lion's share of the burdens, while the poor get a pass. God, of course, never endorsed such an idea, and the widow understood that her lack of sufficient wealth was no excuse for withholding her gift to God. She trusted God and obeyed His will, and will be forever remembered for having done so. When we think of this aspect of the widow's gift, we are reminded of the Macedonian Christians who sent a gift to help the needy saints in Jerusalem. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 5, Paul spoke of their gift, which is a Christian example of the widow's mite. Paul said, "Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participating in the support of the saints. And this not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God." Now notice the terms that Paul used to describe the circumstances of the Macedonians' gift. They did so out of a great ordeal, out of affliction, and out of deep poverty. These were not wealthy Christians, but they dug deep in order to send something to help their brethren in Judea. They, like the widow, trusted in God to supply their needs and obeyed the Lord's will that the brethren should love one another in every aspect of life. The result was that they did far more than even the great apostle expected of them. But they did so because they had first given themselves to the Lord, as Paul said in verse 5. And this is the secret to the widow's mite, M-I-G-H-T. You see, the widow had obviously committed herself to God in a far deeper manner than all the rich people who gave large sums of money. Therefore, her gift was superior to all the others. The Macedonians likewise had given themselves completely to the Lord. Therefore, they were able to give beyond what anyone might have expected, because they trusted in the Lord first and foremost. The might, the power of these gifts is seen in the fact that we are still talking about them and learning from them nearly 2,000 years later. The widow's gift compels us to examine our hearts in our service to the Lord. While the context of the Lord's observations was the giving of money to the treasury of the temple in Jerusalem, the principle of the widow's mite applies to every aspect of our lives as Christians. Are we as committed as she was to God? Are we willing to give the last of what we possess, whether in time or money, in order to do what the Lord commands? Or are we more like the other worshipers that day who only gave to God from their surplus? It's a serious question that warrants serious consideration. The story of the widow's mite is a story about trust and faith and obedience. It is a story about God being able to accomplish great things with our small gifts, whatever they may be. It is a story of encouragement and hope. But it is only such if we have the kind of faith that the widow and the Macedonians possessed. Their faith came from having given themselves first to the Lord, and this enabled them to do far beyond what anyone might have expected of them, and it will work the same for us today if we are willing to follow their example. Thanks very much for listening today. Please join us again next time for Let the Bible Speak.